Welcome to Sex Ed with DB. I'm your host, DB. Let's get into it. In a world that constantly encourages you to change, it's bold to just be yourself. Sexual expression and satisfaction are different for everybody, so rather than conforming to others, focus on falling in love with who you are. Lion's Den sources the very best products to help you find what you like and help you feel confident expressing your sexual desires. You can get 15% off in-store and online using code SEXEDWITHDB at lionsden.com to begin exploring everything about yourself. Follow them on social at Lion's Den Adult on Instagram and TikTok. What if I told you that I did a masturbation experiment with the magic wand and the results were incredible? Don't believe me? Let me share a few things with the class. When using the magic wand every day, I experienced less stress, anxiety, and physical tension. I reported more frequent positive moods when using the magic wand every day, including higher levels of confidence. My level of horniness increased over time when using the magic wand every day. Want to see how else the magic wand impacted me positively? Go to sexedwithdb.com/magicwandexperiment to learn more. Hi again, Mom.
Hi, Dan.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Good. Have you had a busy day?
Yeah.
You've had a busy, really
long
busy
day.
Long day.
Yeah.
Well, I'm really excited that we get to have you at the end of a long day because this is the last episode of season 9 of Sex Ed with DB.
Wow.
Isn't that absurd?
Yeah. How old were you when you started this? You're a youngster.
Like 24? Kind of crazy. 25?
It's more exciting every year.
It's true. It really does. We're almost at 200 episodes, which is so wild. And yeah, it's been such a pleasure just to get to interview you about all sorts of topics. We've covered a lot of ground over the past 9 seasons. And this topic that we're talking about today, it seems like it would be a no-brainer that we would have talked about this, but we've never actually had a dedicated episode to talking about vaginal births versus C-sections. And so I'm really excited to hear first, you know, really you currently and forever are no longer delivering babies. Is that correct?
Pretty much. Unless I, let's say, cover for another physician's practice or do like an on-call for another group, then I will no longer be taking on my own patients where I will be taking them through pregnancy and then delivering them. I do sometimes now still take care of pregnant patients in the early part of their pregnancy, but once they hit a certain gestational age, they transfer to whoever's going to be delivering them.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're no longer taking someone through the entire pregnancy through their delivery. You're maybe just filling in if needed. But I will introduce you. If this is your first episode hearing my mom is Dr. Rebecca Levy-Gant. She has been practicing as an OBGYN, a board certified OBGYN for over 30 years. She has her own practice in Napa, California. And most importantly, as she would say, she's a mom. And so
not just a mom,
my mom. But when you introduce yourself, you're like, but I'm a mom. That's my most important job. So you're the mom to 3 kids and 2 stepkids. And you love us all very much, and we love you back. And so it's nice to have you.
Thanks for that introduction. Couldn't have said it better myself.
I know. I've had you on at least 10 times now, so I can.
Yes, and you've known me for many years.
My whole life. So why don't you tell us how many C-sections that you've done in your career of 30-plus years versus vaginal births, and like how I want that number, and then I want to know, like, in the general population in the U.S., how common is it to get a C-section compared to a vaginal delivery?
Okay, that's a lot of information in those questions. But first, I just want to say that I would like to correct something, that I don't like the terminology of vaginal delivery versus C-section, because that kind of sounds like it's setting it up for like an us versus them kind of thing. Okay. And there's enough of that
in the world.
On social media and in all these parenting
groups. We don't mean to perpetuate stereotypes here.
Yes, exactly. So it's just, to tell you the truth, the way I feel about it is they are two different modes of delivery. One is not inherently better than the other. And there are pros and cons about each type of delivery. So as far as my own statistics, so I started my residency in, I don't want to say, but 1993. And so have been with my residency plus all the years after that delivering babies up until this past year for almost 30 years. In that period of time, of course, it waxed and waned. When I was a resident, we did hundreds of deliveries in a week. And when I was in a private practice where we were a group practice, you know, a little bit less than that. And in the last 10 years, I've been a solo practice. So by necessity of not driving myself crazy and burning myself out, I've really only done maybe a maximum of 4 to 5 deliveries a month for the 10 or so years that I've been in solo private practice. So not a ton, but just enough to get a taste of every type of pregnancy and every type of delivery. So in the entire time, if you want to average it out, I've done several thousand deliveries, of course. And then if you look at percentage-wise, I kind of have always prided myself in having overall a pretty low C-section rate. So C-section rate is how many people are delivering versus how many of them end up delivering via C-section. And you don't really count people like who didn't try for a delivery, like in statistics, they look at how many people tried for a delivery and out of those people, how many got a C-section. So you don't count people like they had a C-section because they couldn't have vaginal delivery for some reason, like they never were intended to have a vaginal delivery. They were having a repeat C-section because they elected it or because it was necessary medically. So you don't like count those as like quote unquote vaginal births that didn't go well or something like that. But when you look at, let's say, how many have you tried to have deliver vaginally? And then what percentage of that, of my patients overall, delivered via C-section when they had intended a vaginal delivery? My rate has probably run anywhere, depending on the setting, from like 18 to 22%, which is not bad because the national rate somewhere runs somewhere around 33%. But you know, you can't really say what's the rate of the whole country or something like that. They do look at those statistics hospital per hospital. And to tell you the truth, doctors do get penalized when their section rates go up too high, which I feel like is kind of ridiculous because it's not like your section rate is high because you just chose to C-section everybody. C-section rates go up higher, especially lately, because people have higher risk pregnancies. There are more reasons why they might have to have a C-section. But in general, there are a lot of rules to follow that when somebody, let's say just an average person having their first baby goes into the hospital, assuming they will be in labor, they will, you know, get to a certain amount of dilation, they will push the baby out. And then if they don't end up with that vaginal delivery, there's a whole slew of reasons why they might end up with a C-section. And for me, I don't think any terminology should be used there as that was a failure or that was, you just couldn't do it, your body couldn't do it. And unfortunately, the world, especially the world of social media, which is so judgmental about these things, really casts that eye at women who tried to have a vaginal delivery, but somehow, quote unquote, couldn't and ended up with a C-section. And not only do other people judge them, but they harshly judge themselves a lot of the time. So I think that's kind of, that has to get right out of here.
Yeah, it's kind of wild. I'm rewatching The Mindy Project, which I've seen before, obviously, because I said
she's not a real gynecologist, just to let you know.
Yeah, Mindy, surprise, Mindy Kaling is not a real gynecologist. But in the show, spoiler alert, it came out 10 years ago. Which is relevant, the fact that it came out 10 years ago, because even 10 years is like a little dated. But Danny Castellano is going to be the father of her baby. And she's like, I just want to have a C-section, like blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you just want to like check out like during your first real, you know, hardship as a mom, like feel free. Or she's like, I want to have drugs. And he's like, what? Like your body is like made to have this pain, like whatever, like all the
hello man,
like
hello,
all the
Mr.
classic
man.
Stereotypes that you hear. And I was kind of, and it's so funny because he's an OBGYN in the show, right? So you'd think that like, okay, that wouldn't happen, but I do.
Oh, it doesn't matter. He's a man. He has no idea.
I mean, I do think it speaks to this idea of like, hopefully this is shifting and changing. Although like cultural norms are very strong. Like you said, social media pressures, friend pressures, different communities that people are in, misinformation is very strong. But I just thought that that was funny how like dated 10 years ago was, when I don't think a TV show like that would talk about that in that sense now. I think people very well know that, okay, if you're going to have an epidural, if you're going to use drugs, like that's a perfectly normal and fine option. If you don't feel like using or if you don't feel like not doing that and you don't want pain, essentially. But I'd love for you, let's back up a little bit, because let's define these terms for our listeners. Like, what exactly is a cesarean section, aka a C-section? And can you define a vaginal birth and like what happens in each procedure?
Okay. Vaginal birth is kind of self-explanatory. There is a very big object that is going to come out of a very small space. So basically, if you're going to, let's say, quote unquote, the typical type of labor and delivery for a vaginal birth, and this is anybody that will labor and deliver. I had a few of my own, you know, I have friends, relatives, patients who have all had them. But basically, what you assume is going to happen, and this plays into the idea of what's right to happen. People have this idea that someone will start to have a few contractions, then they'll have more contractions, that which feel like menstrual cramps that, you know, in the very beginning of the labor process, most people kind of go, oh, this is labor, I can handle this. And then it gets stronger. Then it gets even stronger and way stronger. And the type and the strength of contractions you have to have with frequency enough to cause the cervix, which is the mouth of the womb, so to speak, or the opening to the uterus where the baby has to come through, it has to get very, very open to pass something as big as even the smallest baby out of there. So the contractions that someone has to have in labor to make the cervix open are very intense and very strong in the majority of cases. And you have to labor enough to get that cervix to 10 centimeters, which is what we also call fully dilated, and then start pushing. There are really very few people who can have a vaginal delivery without a long pushing phase if it's their first baby. And by long, you know, there's a lot of controversy about how long should somebody be allowed to push. And there's no really hard and fast rule, like you can only push this much, otherwise we will stop the process. We will stop you from having a baby. You can't do that. But basically, there are some guidelines to follow in terms of how long did it take them to get to this position in labor? How long do we think they're going to end up having to push? How high up is the baby? How low down is the baby? So certain number of hours of pushing is normal. And then usually, if they push with enough force and with enough duration, a baby, usually head down, most babies that are born vaginally are born head first, will come out with some assistance or no assistance. You know, babies have been born for many years where there wasn't somebody medical there to catch them. And I'm not saying they shouldn't be there, but I'm just saying that if someone's in labor and they happen to be on the way to the hospital, the baby's not going to wait and say, wait, the doctor's not here yet, or the midwife is not here yet. Babies are going to come.
Thousands of years, so, in fact, people have been having babies without medical professionals.
But also in that time, many people died having babies. Right. Maybe babies died, right. You know, like, so it's, I'm not saying we should go back to that. I'm just saying that the normal course of events is that when someone's in labor and then they're in active labor, is that the baby should come down far enough so that it can be pushed out, and hence a vaginal delivery. That's kind of the short version, but basically there's a lot of things that go into getting from point A of starting labor to point B, holding a baby in your arms. And it doesn't always work out that way, that you're able to push a baby out for many different reasons.
Right.
As far as a C-section is concerned, a C-section is just a method of delivering a baby where the baby is born through an incision in the uterus. So, you know, it happens in an operating room, occasionally somewhere else. I have done one C-section in an emergency room. That's not recommended. But basically, in an operating room, in a sterile condition where the surgeon will cut through the layers of the abdomen, meaning the skin and, you know, separating the muscles, getting down to where the uterus is, cutting open the uterus with a scalpel and delivering the baby in whatever position the baby's in. That to do a C-section, it doesn't really matter what position your baby is, head down, butt down, feet down, whatever, but doing a delivery where basically a hand goes into the uterus and gently guides the baby out. Once the baby's out, the procedures after delivery are very much the same for vaginal and C-section as far as the actual baby coming out is concerned, considering once the baby's out and there's still a placenta, the placenta is usually detached from the baby, vaginal or C-section. The baby is examined or handed to the mom or whatever. Even in C-section, there's a lot of times where the baby's able to be, you know, greeting the mom, bringing it up to the mom's face, not the same way as in a vaginal delivery because there's a sterile field there while the section's going on. But if everything is okay, then we take the placenta out, we repair all the layers, and basically it is like having abdominal surgery. It is having abdominal surgery, so the recovery is different. A lot of people describe it, I've not had C-sections, but people have described it to me as they feel like they're recovering from an operation, not necessarily recovering from a birth.
Right.
Now, if people were in labor before they had a C-section, like let's say labor, and they don't end up with a vaginal delivery and they end up with a C-section, unfortunately, they kind of end up feeling both sometimes. Like if they pushed, but the baby couldn't come out, then they still have whatever could happen during a pushing phase, which could be, you know, swelling or tearing or anything like that. And then they have a C-section. So then they have the recovery from that as well. So that's kind of a double recovery.
Right.
But basically, those are just two different ways to, you know, have a baby come into the world. And I don't think either one is inherently better or worse. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like people should judge the way anybody, themselves or other people, bring their baby into the world.
Right.
And I don't know what it'll take to stop a lot of that stigma, but little by little, definitely through conversations I've had with patients, like I've had patients come into me and say, I just want to know if you would consider doing a C-section for me when I really don't have a reason, like a medical reason to have it done. Would you still do it? And, you know, this is not a place where I can say you cannot have that. Mm. This is a place where I can say a C-section is like many other procedures that I do, where I need to inform you about the risks and benefits of having one. That's not scaremongering. That's right. Not, you know, saying you shouldn't do it.
No,
that's saying you need to.
Them.
Exactly. You need to be fully informed. This is what could happen. This is what likely will happen. These are the risks, the benefits, the complications. And if you are of sound mind and body, and that's what you want, sure, I've done a couple, you know, I can't say lots because that's not usually what people request, but I've certainly had people come in and say, this is what I want, and I know the risks and benefits, and where do I sign?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, like, at least in media and kind of like my understanding is that vaginal delivery is kind of the default. And I don't know if that is like, because that is the more typical route, and that C-sections are available if people want them. But I do feel like the messaging in the past that I've gotten around C-sections at one point or another is like, this is like an emergency. Like, this happens, you know, if something really goes wrong, which I think that can happen. But it sounds like what you're saying is that we should really be informing patients of the risks, the benefits of both, and it should be their choice. Am I saying
yes.
what you're saying?
Well, I mean, when you think about an operation in general, is there anybody that would kind of say, I don't need an operation, but I would like an operation? I mean, for any other thing, you know, you have a little tumor, I could either squeeze it out of you or I could cut you open.
Right.
No one's going to say, please do the cutting, you know?
Yeah.
But when it comes to this, this is so emotionally charged. There, you know, even when people name the type of birth, they always use this terminology like, I had a natural birth. What does that even
mean?
You're
literally saying my next question. So like, okay, why should we not use the term natural birth? And why should we use the term vaginal birth? Like, let's talk about the stigmas that are being perpetuated with the term quote unquote natural.
Natural leaves the impression that it's somehow better to have a vaginal delivery. And I really would like to know what people mean by natural. I have to say, in discussing it with people, most people mean I want a no intervention, no low kind of medicalized kind of birth. Like, if I don't have to have something done to me, I don't want it done to me. Like, I don't want medication that I don't need. And I don't want pain medication because I think it's better somehow to power through it. But in reality, when people say, my body was meant to do this, what are you saying to all the people whose body did not do that, right? If somebody did have a C-section for whatever reason, and I'll get into reasons for C-sections in a minute, but what is that saying to women when many schools of thought say women should have choices, where to deliver, what position to deliver in, whether they want pain relief, whether they want epidurals, whether they want to be induced? Women should have the choices. So why shouldn't they be able to choose the mode of delivery as well? Mm-hmm. If you say they shouldn't, then aren't you take, not you, but aren't people taking away the choice of women should make their own choices? So I think the term natural may mean something different to different people, but I do tend to, like, when someone says that to me, I always would say to them, what exactly are your criteria for natural? Because some people just mean, I want to walk around while I'm in labor. Totally valid. I want to take a shower while I'm in labor. Also valid. I want to not have any monitor put on me. For me, that's really not valid. I mean, there's certain different kinds of monitoring. Sometimes monitors should be on all the time if something high risk is going on. Sometimes a monitor can be intermittent. You can make that decision. But I don't think that women who are talking about, I want it natural, I don't think everything that they think goes along with a natural delivery is necessarily safe or even something that I would want them to
that
entertain.
You recommend, just, would recommend right, as a doctor.
Just because they think it's better, I have to pose the question to them, why is it better? Mm-hmm. Like, if somebody says, I don't want any pain medication, don't give me any. And I have to ask them in the next question, like, what is it about that that makes you feel like you don't want it? And, you know, it is so true. I've definitely had patients who said, I want to experience that labor pain and I want to feel the whole thing.
That is kind of a common thing, like a common response if that's what people are talking about.
But I also think that they need to be flexible enough to understand that unless you've been through it before, like for people having their first baby, I really have to say they have no idea, even if they've watched all the movies, even if their best friend said something to them.
15 seasons of Grey's Anatomy.
Exactly. Oh, don't get me started. you know that they had a baby delivered on there where they took the placenta out before the baby? Oh. I was like watching and go, that's a dead baby.
Oh, boy.
That's crazy.
Oh, boy.
But anyway, bad technical support on that. Anyway, I'm getting away from the point. The point is really that if somebody thinks that something is better, I need them to define for me what's really better about it. Because when somebody says, I don't want an epidural because isn't that better for the baby? I have to give them, you know,
the facts.
Science.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, if I give them the facts and they say, this is still my decision, that's okay.
Right.
But I don't think they should be making their decision based on something that's not really true. It's just something they think.
Yeah.
Because honestly,
preconceived
when I've been delivering
notions,
babies,
really.
Yes. When I've been delivering babies, I don't want to see people suffer. I, you know, through all the babies that I've delivered, the people that have most fondly remembered their deliveries, I have to say, are not the people who are screaming in pain just waiting for it to get over. And you know what? If that is the way you want to experience your labor, that is fine. You can choose that. But if you're doing it because somehow someone told you or you read that by having your delivery that way, that is better somehow for you or for the baby, just in general better.
It's not. That's not true.
It's not. Right.
Abortion is healthcare. Abortion is a human right. People have always had abortions, and they will always have abortions. And these days, it doesn't require an office visit. Let's talk about medication abortion. It's safe and effective using two kinds of pills, mifepristone and misoprostol, or misoprostol only if mifepristone is unavailable. And it's available by mail in all 50 states, with hotlines and support resources too. Plan C is an amazing nonprofit information campaign that runs an online guide to pills and advocates for safe, legal, affordable, stigma-free abortion care for all. Will you join the movement with me? Visit plancpills.org to learn more. Let's talk about lube and condoms. Something important to know is that oil-based lube is not to be used with condoms because the oil can cause the condom to break or tear, which would defeat the purpose of using it. Thank goodness for UberLube. UberLube is latex compatible, so it's safe and effective to use with condoms. But wait, there's more. Dispensing 2 drops of UberLube inside a condom and a measured pump outside will increase pleasure. What are you waiting for? Use code SEXEDWITHDB for 15% off at uberlube.com. We have a couple questions left, but I don't want to forget you saying, oh, I'm going to go through like some reasons that people want to have a C-section. So why don't you go ahead and go through those?
I don't think it's reasons that people want to have a C-section. I think there are 2 categories of reasons that people do have C-sections. One category is fetal reasons, so baby reasons. Something about the pregnancy or the baby says that a vaginal delivery might not be safe for you. Mm. So there are women with certain heart diseases. There are women with certain neurological problems. Women who have maybe have broken a pelvis in a bad car accident. Women who, for some reason, cannot go through a phase where they're pushing. You know, they can't build up that kind of pressure in their head because they have some medical condition. So medical reasons that a baby should not come out vaginally. Mm-hmm. Those would be classified as maternal reasons, right? Like something that's not exactly healthy or right with the mom, a medical condition. So she should not go through that. So there are also other maternal conditions that happen. Like, let's say a patient had a C-section previously, and that doesn't necessarily mean they can't have a vaginal delivery the next time, but that's kind of on an individual basis. If something happened in the delivery the last time where, let's say, they had a very premature delivery and the uterus was cut in a certain way that would preclude them laboring the next time. There are different cuts that you can make in the uterus, and some of them preclude labor. So if you had that, then the next time you deliver should be through a planned C-section so that there's not a risk of that old incision rupturing. And then, of course, there are fetal reasons. You know, what are baby reasons why people end up with a C-section? So what if something medically is wrong with the baby? Like, what if the baby has a condition that would not allow it to go through a labor process, a heart condition, any number of serious medical conditions that would mean that when it's time to deliver, the baby should not go through the stress of a vaginal delivery and the labor and the pushing process. Certain things that happen during labor, like it's not uncommon for somebody to be in labor and going through the phases of labor, and something happens during that process that seems that the baby's not tolerating the labor. Then you have to evaluate that on an individual basis. If the person is about to deliver and your fetal heart rate tracing says this baby is not tolerating the last stage of labor, if the baby is close enough to delivering where it can be helped out for a vaginal delivery, then that can be done. But if the baby's not close enough to delivering and there's some worry about the baby's condition inside, those are the situations where you were thinking about before, like, well, this might be an emergency, right? I mean, also other maternal conditions. I mean, there is a condition where the placenta starts to tear away from the wall of the uterus before the baby's born. That's called an abruption. And they're not common, but if it happens, the baby has to get out of there in an instant, because once the placenta is not attached anymore, it's not supplying the baby with oxygen. The baby needs to be gotten out emergently. And that's another one of those kind of emergent conditions. And there are other problems with placentas, like if the placenta is growing underneath the baby, blocking the exit, so blocking the cervix, we call that a placenta previa. You can't deliver a baby through the cervix because the placenta is there first, and that will cause a hemorrhage. So those conditions. And then what we were talking about before is we call it maternal request C-section, mm-hmm. happening more and more, and not as common in this country, but there are some other countries where that's very common. And whether it's because women don't want to go through birth, or they saw someone else go through a delivery that was very traumatic or something like that, maternal request is valid. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, as long as somebody has informed consent and they can consent to that, that's valid as well. And also sexual trauma. Mm. There certainly are women who come and they say, I cannot conceive of having exams and going through labor. And again, that is, I guess, also maternal request, but that's truly a medical indication. Right. You know, anything that falls into that category of there's some reason why this person does not want to or cannot go through whatever is accompanied with a vaginal delivery, then a C-section, you know, luckily there's very, very safe and pretty low risk in this country to perform and recover from a C-section. Also, I mean, I know this list is really long, but I keep thinking of other reasons. If someone has had a vaginal delivery where they had a big trauma during their delivery, like let's say they had a tear that we would call like a fourth degree tear, where when the baby came out, the tear went from the vagina all the way into the rectum. Yeah. That's a hard recovery. And that's certainly a valid reason that somebody might not want to go through that again.
Certainly.
Also, if a patient has a history of herpes and she has a current outbreak at the time that she's going into labor, the thought is to not have the baby in that general area and to deliver through C-section. So there are more reasons, you know, but I'm just saying in general, there are many, many things to consider both about the baby's condition and the mom's desires and condition. And so I think people really have to be able to have that talk with whoever is planning to deliver them, because if they are unable to obtain the information and unable to ask all the questions and get all the thoughts that the medical professionals have on why it should be this way or that way, or discuss it and say, what do you think? What do you want to do? Then how can anybody really make an informed decision? I mean, there's so much information out there about pregnancy and delivery and birth. And I can tell you every day somebody will walk into my office with ideas that, you know, are not medically sound, you know, and I'm really flexible about how people should go through their labor or their pregnancy, et cetera. You know, I don't think there's any one set way for everybody to be. I think there's a lot of room for flexibility, but safety is paramount.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the most important priority, and moms want that. They want their babies to be healthy and they want to be healthy. And I'm wondering, this is a fantastic episode. Thank you for all this information. It's making me think whenever I'm ready to have a baby, thinking through these questions of like, wow, this is really interesting. And it really, I'm sure, is dependent for every person and their health and their mindset and their experiences. But where can people find more medically accurate information on this? Would you recommend they check out ACOG? Would you recommend they check out other kind of organizations? Where should people go to read up on this?
Definitely ACOG, the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, has a really good bit of information about pregnancy, birth, delivery, C-sections. If you go to the American College of OBGYN and you go to their FAQs, they're all like very long, expandable lists of all the topics that you can think of. And they do have some good information about this. Also, I did find a New York Times article. It's in the parenting part of the New York Times from April 2020 about how to prepare for a C-section.
Oh, wow.
It's a really nice article because I always thought I was really doing a really good job, like bringing someone in and to sit down when we were going to do a C-section and give them all the information and pamphlets and all that. But it's amazing how this, it's really so, it's very common for me. But it's so much information for somebody, so that I think reading other things that are good information and preparation stuff is really key. I really do think the key of going into any labor, any delivery, any C-section, preparation as much as possible and flexibility as much as possible. Those really are the two things, because it breaks my heart when I see people who are postpartum from deliveries, not by me, but who will come in and just say, I had a terrible experience, you know, for a variety of reasons. And you know what? If you go to any of these Facebook groups or, you know, mom or postpartum websites and things like that, I'm telling you, it's so sad that people feel they were not listened to. They feel, you know, I mean, morbidity and mortality for this kind of thing is high in our country. And I just unfortunately think since COVID, I think things are getting worse because so many OBGYNs are leaving the practice. They're leaving the states where the abortion laws are, you know, so restrictive because they can't even take care of their own patients. Because in these states that, I don't mean to go off on another tangent, but in these states that are so restrictive, the restriction also comes when you're trying to take care of your pregnant people who run into a problem. Mm. So it's very hard to be able to make sure you have these conversations. But I love when patients come in kind of with a list of questions and we allot a certain amount of time to answer and go over them, and they leave feeling more informed because information is really power when it comes to this.
I really am your daughter, huh? Confirmed. yeah, no, you're amazing. I mean, this is,
oh, I remember your birth. Don't worry.
I'm sure you do. But yeah, this is an amazing episode. I think I feel very lucky to have you in many ways, but definitely for things like this and to get information out to our listeners who might be pregnant or might want to have a baby soon and are thinking about it, or who have had a baby and want to think differently maybe about their second pregnancy and about their second birth. And so just major kudos to you. And I feel very happy. And I know your patients feel so lucky that they had you for so long and have you. And so, yeah, thank you so much for being on, Mom. I love you so much.
Thank you. I love you so much. And I'm glad that you're kind of like the apple that dropped off the tree. 'Cause I see it, you know, I do.
Our creator, host, and executive producer is me, Danielle Bezalel. Our producer and communications lead is Catherine Cohen. Our producer and communications coordinator is Sadie Leegee. Our marketing coordinator is Kate Fiala. Our music theme is by Hook Sounds. Thanks so much to our featured guests, partners, and listeners. Want to partner with us? Email us at sexedwithdb@gmail.com. For more sex ed content, follow us on Instagram at sexedwithdbpodcast and on TikTok at sexedwithdb. Want to rep us with some brand new Sex Ed with DB merch? Go to sexedwithdb.com/merch to check it out now. See you next time.